Hello and welcome to The Whole Health Cure, a space for trustworthy, science-based information on how you can live healthier and longer through the way you eat, move, think, and recover. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist, a physician, scientist, and lifestyle medicine pioneer with over 25 years of experience in patient-centered clinical care. Our conversation today is about integrating science and intuition for women's health, and I'm joined by Carrie Levine. Carrie is a certified nurse midwife and Institute of Functional Medicine certified practitioner, the founder of the Whole Woman Health Clinic, and author of Whole Woman Health, a guide to creating wellness for any age and stage. She helps women find wholeness in imperfection, helping them restore their health. In her two decades of innovative healthcare practice, Levine has harnessed science and intuition to connect her patients' physical symptoms and test results with her lifestyle choices and daily practices, resulting in whole, healthy, and happy lives. Carrie, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So, Carrie, you have spent decades in women's health. How did your career kind of meander and end up where you are now?
That's a great question. When I was an undergraduate at the University of Maine in Orono, I got a job working at the women's clinic as a peer counselor. And the woman who was the director of the clinic at the time, mind you, it was 1988, so it was sort of the height of the AIDS epidemic on a college campus, was this incredible woman who was starting a feminist health clinic in Bangor that at the time didn't actually have a brick and mortar space. But she was just this incredible pioneering woman, and that was sort of my entrance into women's health. I knew that I didn't want to be a doctor because I don't really like sick people. And which not everybody does, but you know, in my younger brain, I didn't make those differentiations, and they were harder to find right back in the early 90s. And so I had a conversation with Ruth, my mentor, and she said, well, how long do you want to go to school for? How much debt do you want to have? And what do you want your life to look like? And I thought, well, I don't really want to be a naturopath because I really felt like I could affect change more strongly from within the system instead of outside of the system. And I knew I didn't want to, quote unquote, just be a yoga teacher. And in the state of Maine, nurse practitioners are licensed to practice independently. So we don't require physician oversight. Where services are reimbursed by insurance companies, we can write prescriptions, et cetera, et cetera. And I liked the sound of that autonomy. So I ended up, I guess I should back up and say, I got an undergraduate degree in public relations and women's studies, which I like to joke and say, I don't have anything to do with public relations and everything I do has to do with public relations, right? I mean, interacting with patients is not necessarily easy. So I ended up going to programs designed for people who had bachelor's in things other than nursing. So they sort of push you through the nursing curriculum and were direct entry into advanced practice. And I ended up at Case Western Reserve in Cleveland, Ohio. And many of the women that I was drawn to were all going to be midwives, and I didn't really know what that was or what that meant. And I had a super powerful friend who was a doula and provided doula trainings. And she's like, why don't you just do it? And I did it. And prior to that, I had been leading outdoor trips for kids for Outward Bound, sort of with adjudicated youth, and had also done that in college with women. And there was this direct transfer of skills from helping women climb mountains and climb rock faces to the labor room. And I felt like, oh, I can do this. And I want to take care of women through their whole life, not their whole life except for the childbearing year, like a women's health nurse practitioner. So I ended up becoming a midwife and spent the first 7.5 years of my career at our small local community hospital that did about 200 births a year. And during that time, had my own children, and the lifestyle was super tough. I went from 50% call to 1 in 5 call to 1 in 3 call, and at the same time had my own kids and breastfed my own kids, and it was a little bit crazy. I was always looking for another option, and then a position at Women to Women, which was a pioneering women's health clinic about 50 miles south of here, opened up. And I went and had an interview, and it was getting there was where I learned functional medicine. And when I found the language, it really put words to that, which I felt like I had always understood.
Mm-hmm. And so whole woman health, which is, I know what you do now, what does that term mean to you?
It means taking care of women, not only in terms of their body, but also in terms of their heart and their mind. And in my mind, those aspects of us can't be separated at all. You know, and I think about a woman I spoke to on the phone a couple of weeks ago. She is a potential new patient, and she was having joint pain, and she was having hot flashes, and she was divorced, and her work required her body for physical labor. And she said, oh, and by the way, a couple of years ago, my child took their own life. You know, and that sort of by the way to me is not an aside. That's not separate from what she's experiencing in her body. And it is absolutely essential for me to feel like I'm doing a good job to understand some of those strong aspects of women's lives.
So glad you gave that example, Carrie, because I think sometimes when you can actually visualize like what that means and the perspective of a patient, it adds a lot of meaning to that. So what are the types of things that you see in your practice?
So I provide routine gynecology, annual exams, pap smears, breast exams, endometrial biopsies, all that routine GYN kind of things. But then I also have the whole functional medicine aspect of what I do. So I do a ton of hormone balancing. I do a ton of autoimmune disease. And I do a ton of chronic disease of lifestyle, right? I will see the women who get diagnosed with high blood pressure, and their practitioner hands them a pill, and they walk through the door here and they say, there has to be something else I can do. There just has to be something else. But nobody has taken the time to have that conversation with them. So I work on those kinds of issues as well.
Yeah. And when somebody comes to you, for example, with hormone imbalances, what's a typical evaluation that you put somebody through?
So my intake is about 14 forms online, and it really puts women through their paces. I always thank women when they get here because it's a lot. Like the intake paperwork is a lot. There's, you know, a 24-hour diet recall. There's family history. There's social history, which gets into, have you traveled? What do you do for fun? You know, were you breastfed as a baby? Like we go all the way back. And it depends on the individual, right? I mean, I don't really practice or believe in protocol kind of medicine, but if someone is curious about their hormones, we'll have a conversation about their life for sure, and their stress, because there's such a relationship between stress and hormone balance. And if they're interested in testing, we'll talk about conventional serum testing and the pros and cons of that versus functional hormone testing. More specifically, I often will use a dried urine test for comprehensive hormones, which is called a Dutch test. And I love it because it's done at home. So nobody has to go to the lab, and it's not a blood stick. So those are advantages right there. And it just gives me such a comprehensive picture of what's going on hormonally that I can't get straight from conventional labs and serum. One of the parts that I'm most interested in is estrogen metabolites and what the body is doing with the way it breaks down estrogen. Is it doing it in a way that is health protective, or is it doing it in a way that's disease promoting? Because there's a lot to do. If a woman's body is breaking down estrogen in a way that's increasing their risk for an estrogen dependent cancer or osteoporosis, there's a lot that they can do, from exercising to eating cruciferous vegetables to high dose fish oil to supplementation. And we want to get at that. I want to know that, particularly if someone is considering hormone therapy. It sort of falls into the do no harm end of things for me. You know, what is all the data that I can gather to help assure myself and the woman that we're taking good care of her and mitigating any risk?
Yeah, I mean, we see a lot of hormone-related questions and issues, so I can see how that would be such an interest area for a lot of people, especially given that you have had so many decades in women's health. And with the hormone imbalance, so what are some symptoms that make people suspect that. And I'd also love to learn more about the panel that you do for them to really break down the metabolites of their estrogen. So can you speak a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Hormone issues that I see women for range across the board from irregular periods to no period to heavy long periods to painful periods to premenstrual syndrome to all the symptoms associated with perimenopause, which can be all of the bleeding variations to worsening PMS, insomnia, anxiety, hot flashes, night sweats, vaginal dryness, bladder dysfunction, joint pain. It kind of goes on. And then, of course, there's the whole menopausal picture, which is just sort of an extension of what happens perimenopausally. So I do work with women on some things like fibroids and that sort of thing from the angle that I can get at it from, as well as PCOS is a big one because PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome, for listeners who may not be familiar with it, the conventional medical community doesn't have a whole lot to offer those women other than birth control pills and metformin. And the functional medicine world, we have a lot. We have sort of a different way of understanding that and a lot to offer. I'm thinking about a woman I saw yesterday in her 20s who maybe was diagnosed with PCOS. She wasn't totally sure. It sounded like at the very least high androgens to me. And she classically was put on birth control pills when she was a teenager. Then she was put on metformin, which she really didn't tolerate very well. And nobody ever talked to her about the carbohydrate, insulin, testosterone, high androgen relationship. And nobody ever offered her any nutritional counseling at all about her situation. And that was really what she was after. She'd been to 3 different endocrinologists and nobody had really anything to offer her at all. And she's like, I need a plan. And so fortunately, the Institute for Functional Medicine has a whole suite of diets, which, you know, that is their word or a word for therapeutic nutrition intervention, not a weight loss strategy. So they have a whole suite of them. And one is a core food plan. And so it's just like, how do you shift someone even more toward a Mediterranean-like diet who's not eating that way? And it has recipes and it has the week laid out and it has the grocery list. And I could print all of that off for her and be like, here, I think, is what you're looking for. Go try it for 12 weeks and then come back and let's see what we learn. Like, what happens? How do you feel? What do you notice? Is anything different? And then we'll go from there.
Mm-hmm. That is so important. You know, we have talked about that a lot on this podcast, of that role of the lifestyle piece and just how important it is, especially the nutritional counseling, because most of chronic diseases that we see, I'm in internal medicine, it's very similar, right? There's so much lifestyle management and the difference that it makes is pretty dramatic. So yeah, I can completely relate. And the hormone panel, so I think there's a lot of interest on the part of women, especially the woman I see, of what are the right tests that they should know about, ask for, and how to really fine tune their hormones. Can you talk us through that a little bit?
Sure. You know, if you're looking at a conventional route, then you're basically wanting to look at testing about 7 days after ovulation when hormones are going to be at their peak. And that gets muddied for a perimenopausal woman or even a younger woman whose periods are irregular. You know, the question becomes, what is day one and when is ovulation and when is 7 days after that? And so oftentimes women will use an ovulation predictor kit to try and nail down the timing. Getting the timing right is sort of step one, right? It's like, you got to know what's the reference range of normal that you're working with and are you in the right phase? So there's that. I am always reticent when people come and say, I'm menopausal. My doctor tested, my FSH was greater than 80 and my estradiol was less than 20. And I got my period a week ago and I'm thinking to myself, That's the thing. Like, if you have your period, you're not menopausal. And there's no crystal ball to that, only retrospect, right? Looking back and going a year without a period. And the hallmark of perimenopause, as I know, is that the hormones go like this. They go up and down, up and down, up and down. And so you don't know where you're necessarily capturing someone. So you can get quite a bit done through serum, but again, what I can't get through serum that I'm super interested in are those estrogen metabolites. And then this particular test that I'm speaking of, a Dutch test through Precision Analytics, also looks at four-point cortisol, DHEA, melatonin, testosterone metabolites, progesterone metabolites, and eight organic acids that have to do with B vitamins, other steroid hormones, and some detoxification markers. I almost always also want to see someone's adrenal gland function if they're having hormone imbalance, because in general, that is the piece that potentially has most needs to be addressed, is the stress modulation, because of the relationship between the thyroid, the ovaries, and the adrenals. And so the thyroid also would be another area to do some serum testing on. And in my opinion, a TSH is not enough, nor is a TSH and a free T4. I want to see the whole picture. I want to see the TSH, the free T4, the total T4, the free T3, the total T3, the reverse T3, and absolutely positively the thyroid antibodies, because those flag for me that maybe there's an autoimmune component going on, elevated thyroid antibodies being consistent with autoimmune thyroid. And there is a profound connection between gut health, the gut being the home of the immune system, and hormone balance. That is, I think often, I don't know if it's identified in conventional. Is that anything that you learned about in school?
I would say everything that I use in my practice was not something I learned about in school.
No. So,
but it's a different time. I think medical education is shifting towards lifestyle medicine. I mean, that's a lot of, you know, or incorporating an understanding of this connection between, you know, a lot of things you're just mentioning as well in terms of the stress relationship to our health, et cetera. And we're doing more to try and make that a part of medical education. I think, you know, I work in an academic institution and there's a lot of interest on the part of students. So we're doing a lot more to make that a part of the process, especially when they rotate with me in clinic and it's just becoming a part of the education. But yeah, I think at the time I did residency, it really wasn't any part of it. And hopefully the next generation, we're going to change that. But yes, I think you're right.
I think for me, the gut hormone connection is often so profoundly overlooked, and I think is newly, not even overlooked, right? More newly understood, right? This is the emerging science, is that when we have high levels of bacteria in our gut, those bacteria produce enzymes called beta-glucuronidase, which will bind estrogen and recirculate it into the bloodstream so that we end up with higher levels of estrogen because of our gut bacteria. And in that way, part of hormone balance is having a healthy gut.
I think a lot of health comes to a healthy gut. And your point's well made. I think a lot of the science, you know, there's no way it would have been a part of my education because the science came out after I completed residency. So it also just speaks volumes to how much more that we know today than we did back in the 1990s when I was a resident. So when you get a breakdown, you know, this concept of, you know, estrogens that are good for health and some of the estrogens that could potentially be harmful, can you talk people through that? Because I do get a lot of questions from people around, which ones do I want a lot of? Which ones do I not want? And how do I make adjustments to change the profile?
So the metabolites that I am interested in are 2, 4, and 16 hydroxyestrone. And these are metabolites of estrogen. Estrogen first gets metabolized in the stomach, and then it goes to the liver where it gets broken down. And there are many, many genes that affect the way in which estrogen gets broken down. So for any particular woman, she may not have the best complement of genes to break her estrogen down in a way that doesn't sort of co-create harm, potential harm for her. 4-hydroxyestrone, they're referred to as the good, the bad, and the...
The ugly?
Yes, that's it. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Exactly. You've heard this before. So 2-hydroxyestrone is generally thought of as the good. 16-hydroxyestrone is thought of as the bad. So it's not as bad as the 4, but it's not awesome. And then 4-hydroxyestrone is referred to as the ugly estrogen metabolite. And to the best of my understanding, it's actually the research around 4-hydroxyestrone and its correlation with breast cancer incidence is actually coming out of Johns Hopkins. I would have to fact check that. It's been a little while since I've had that information updated, but that was sort of how I was trained in the knowing, in the same way that I want to say it was Hopkins that patented broccoli seed for encapsulation, because high doses of broccoli can shift the way the estrogen is broken down away from the 4 and the 16 and toward the 2. And so that's a really good example of what can be done if someone is sort of innately creating high levels of 4-hydroxyestrone. What can they do? And I alluded to some of the interventions, aerobic exercise, cruciferous vegetables, and this encapsulated broccoli seed is another potential intervention that can shift away from the 4 and any DNA damage that 4-hydroxyestrone can do.
And is it the phytochemicals, or do they know what exactly it is? Is it the sulforaphane?
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I think the secret is plants to so many things.
Yeah, I agree.
And then when you are, do you use any hormones to help balance the different hormone breakdowns, the metabolites?
Yeah, I mean, not so much for the metabolites, but if someone is symptomatic and that is the intervention that they choose, absolutely, I will prescribe hormone therapy. I tend to present women with a continuum of options. I think it's the midwife in me that's like, well, you can have natural childbirth or you can have, you know, a spinal and C-section. But there's all of this stuff that goes on in between that are possibilities. And so when I counsel women about hormone balance, you know, I'm talking about, well, you can do nothing, which I'm assuming you don't really want to do because you're here seeing me. So I'm thinking that you're wanting to do something. And then there's hormone therapy is sort of the other end of the continuum, but there's so much right in between, whether it's stress management or it's herbs or it's acupuncture, which has such a good track record with hormone balancing, particularly for breast cancer survivors who, for whom hormone therapy really isn't a great option. You know, there's all these things, and women really differ in how they want to approach their health. You know, some women are like, I cannot bear to live another day feeling these hot flashes, night sweats, or I'm going to hurt someone if I don't knock this back quickly, or, you know, I really miss having a sex drive. I really, really, really want to have a sex drive, or I can't build muscle mass since menopause. You know, there's such a huge range in women's concerns and how they want to go about addressing it. So I really try and honor women and the way they want to take care of their bodies. And yes, hormone therapy is definitely part of that.
And if you were to pick, like, say, top 3 or top 4 things in women's health, or 4 lifestyle things that you thought if women did this, that it would probably be the most impactful. I know that's a very loaded question with so many different angles, but what advice would you have for women who, you know, again, just want to feel better, want to live optimally?
Eat vegetables, right? That's like...
Is that number 1, 2, 3, and 4?
It's a lot, right? Food is our first medicine. We, you know, we're taking that in 3 to 5 times a day. So with every forkful, we are sending messages to cells in our body. And what message is it that we're sending? Are we sending a sugar message, a pro-inflammatory message? Are we sending a broccoli message? Like, don't worry, everybody, we got it. We're going to detox fine. You know, what message are we sending? So I do feel like food is huge. I think the other thing for us women is to take a really honest look at our lives and how much we're doing, and figuring out what we can outsource, if anything, or where we can practice saying no in terms of modulating our stress. For some of us, we are fortunate enough to have choice in some of those areas of our lives. Not all women have choice in that area of their life, which I appreciate. But for those of us who choose to take a lot on, to be honest about what effect is that having on our stress levels and our sleep, and thereby our overall health. So that would be number two. Number three would be movement, of course, for all the reasons. 30 minutes, 5 days a week, or stacking that time into longer, more condensed sessions and strength training. It seems like the data on strength training is sort of irrefutable now, particularly for midlife or older women, for all the things, whether it's improving insulin sensitivity or maintaining muscle mass or maintaining mobility or increasing serotonin or detoxing optimally, or I mean, we could go on and on. Movement is medicine. Like I tell women, you can't put what movement does for you in a pill. There is no one pill that can do all of that. And in an ideal world, we find things that bring us joy. But I tell women, I'm like, if you don't like it, I don't really care. You know, if you're telling me that you feel this way and you don't want to take medicine, then movement is part of your medicine and you can think it as such if you have to. So movement would be number three. Number four, I would have to dig a little deeper for number four. I would probably throw my hat in on a connection to the natural world. I feel like that is sorely, sorely lost for so many of us. And there is so much healing to be done with the natural world, and that the natural world provides and offers us, should we choose to put ourselves in that environment.
Yeah, those are really good ones. And it's interesting you picked number four to be the connection to the natural world. I think there's a little bit of shift back to focusing on nature as medicine. You know, we've had food as medicine, and I think people are begrudgingly acknowledging exercise as medicine. At least it's a little harder to convince some people than others. And yeah, I mean, in terms of to do it, not that the science is not convincing. And then, but the nature is medicine aspect of it, I think we probably have underestimated and underappreciated for a while now. I mean, I think, you know, our culture is predominated and we've stopped really thinking about what we're missing or losing, spending all this time indoors. So that's interesting that you picked that as number four.
Right. Well, I mean, it's so much of it, right? It's like vitamin D, air quality, the phytochemicals that trees emit, knowing when it's light and when it's dark, being aware of the cycle of the moons, or how about just the season and taking that as a cue for what do we eat? What time do we go to bed? What time do we rise in the morning? All of those things. There's so much I feel like we can, there's so much guidance that the natural world can offer that I think is so supportive of wellness. And to miss those cues is really a missed opportunity, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. And in all the science of how it connects to so much chronic disease and mental health. And it's, you know, again, all four of the things on your list are free, or not totally free. You got to pay for food, but I would say low-hanging fruit, accessible compared to the cost of a lot of treatments and medications, et cetera. So that's another big plus. And yeah, the diet, it's dramatic. I had even a patient come in today just by within 3 weeks of cutting sugar and flour. Joint pains decreased, menstrual cycles regulated, sleeping better, bowel movements better. It's just, even after decades of doing this, I'm just still amazed with the stories of how people respond and what a difference it makes. And I think on one level, you know, I think a lot of people connect food in some way to their health, but it's a different level to appreciate the magnitude and just how much of a difference it's making. I think people just accept some aches and pains, or they accept, I wasn't functioning so well today. And when you strip out all these additives and just change the diet and the sugar, like you mentioned, just the absolute impact of what isn't just age or whatever we attribute these things to is just always just keeps amazing me.
Totally. Or how about diarrhea, right? I'm always amazed at how many women walk around who look well and healthy and have debilitating diarrhea and think that that's normal. It's really astounding. And nobody ever said, hey, maybe if you, why don't you just try knocking out your 6 Diet Cokes a day and see what happens? And lo and behold, a little less artificial sweetener in their system, and they're not stopping to poop on the side of the road, right? And they didn't need this long list of medications to get there. They just needed to change what they put in their body to yield a profound, life-altering, in a positive way, result. It's so fun, don't you think? It's so fun.
Yes, it really is. I think the part that's really fun about it is that you're seeing these dramatic improvements in health, right? And what greater gratification is there than seeing somebody completely turn around and feel better and live life in such a better way? You know, and I have also a practice of people who prefer to be on medication and just find that the lifestyle changes are just would compromise what they view as their quality of life to enough of a degree where they prefer medications. I do find it more gratifying being able to get people off of them than them prescribing them. But, you know, I think everyone obviously finds different ways of what works for them, but I appreciate the joy of what you're describing.
Yeah, totally. I'm similar. You know, I will have women come to the clinic and say, I'm depressed, I want medication. And other women will come to the clinic and say, I'm depressed, I don't want medication. And my job is to honor each of them and how they want to take care of their own body.
Absolutely. And Carrie, first of all, how can people learn more about you and get more information about what you do? Can you tell us where your website is and how they can find you?
Yeah, my website is Carrie Levine CNM. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and every now and again I pop up on LinkedIn, not so much on Twitter. And I published a book in May called Whole Woman Health, as you referred to. And that I really wrote that from a place of wanting to increase access for women who don't or can't find their ways to practitioners like you and I. Sort of the avatar woman in my mind who I wrote for was a 40-something-year-old woman who'd had irritable bowel her whole life and lived in the middle of Nebraska and had been to her family practice doctor, you know, year after year after year, and had tried every medication and just knew intuitively that there had to be something else she could do than just take medication. And so my intention with the book was to really provide an overview of the model and to give people 5 lifestyle recommendations, 5 nutrition recommendations, 5 supplement recommendations, and a little bit of insight into the world of testing that exists beyond conventional testing, so that women could sort of take health into their own hands and do what they can. Try eliminating Diet Coke and see what happens. Try eliminating sugar and flour and see what happens, right? These are things that anybody could do if they set their mind to it, if they know that that is potentially helpful to them. So that was really the intention of the book. So my hope is that I have gotten some feedback that it's a lot of information and super overwhelming. And I was frankly discouraged from writing it because general books apparently don't sell very well. Books sell well when they're targeted to a specific problem. But this was the book that I wanted to write because this women will say to me, so that was a lot, right? At the end of a first visit, that was a lot. Is there something I can read so that I can understand a little bit more? And there really wasn't. So that was where that came from. So that's a nice place. I reference it because anybody can access it. And if the local library doesn't have it, I encourage folks to ask their librarians to purchase it. But it's a nice entry point, a little introduction for this kind of care and the potential benefit that can come from it.
Mm-hmm. And what I love about a word choice that you use and you alluded to before is this intuition, when people just know intuitively that there's something better, and tapping into intuition as a provider and as a patient and leaning into that.
And marrying that with science, right? And that, like, part of what I observed was the pendulum swinging from science, 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 particularly in women's health, to intuition, 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 to the disregard of science, right? And I'm sure you've taken care of the women too who have, you know, who say, I would know if something wasn't right. I would know. And then they turn up with a grapefruit-sized tumor in their body, right, that they didn't know was there. And so I'm really interested in honoring all of our ways of knowing, right? Our internal personal ways of knowing and what science has to offer in the knowing, and blending all of that information together so that a woman can make a good choice for herself.
Carrie, I want to thank you for joining and for providing all this information. I think the work that you do is fantastic, and it's just nice having you as a practitioner, just knowing that people can access the type of care that you're offering. So thank you for all the work that you do and for all the information that you've shared.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to share.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and share it with a friend. Until next time, do something to help improve your whole health naturally.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.